5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, if you've ever had the sense that you would like to be somewhere other than the place that you happen to be at the moment, you might want to consider a car. So we're going to be looking at cars in this episode. Cars are, of course, a fairly big financial decision for a lot of people. They are quite often the third biggest financial commitment you will ever make behind your wife and your house. So I found two excellent guests to get into this. The first is Jeff from Jeff Buys Cars, a exploding YouTube channel. Jeff, tell us about yourself.
Well, I make videos about cars. I like cars. Pretty much all I've ever done since I was a child is cars, and that's pretty much everything about me. I just really like cars. The channel is all about buying, maintaining, running, and looking for old cars, high mileage stuff, cheap stuff, Bangonomics, the lower end of the car market, and that's where my passion is.
Bangonomics, I like that. That's good. We also have, we sometimes describe people as friends of the show, but this man is Praetorian Guard of the show. He actually built all of this, all of the studio, I mean, just everything. He built it all. But before you were building studios for based YouTubers, you actually had your own studio. This is Mark. Tell us about yourself, Mark.
My name is Mark. I didn't have my own studio, but...
Dealership.
Well, yes. I started my first 10 years in corporate career as an accountant in the motor trade, ended up moving sideways as a general manager, running dealerships. Very, very enjoyable experience in your 20s. I was probably one of the youngest general managers in the country with that kind of responsibility. Hugely exciting. I left the motor trade in about 2020, 2021. It changed a lot. A lot of things happened. We can go into deep depths. A guy called Mario Monti in the EU changed franchising rules, caused a lot of upsets. Dealers and manufacturers treated each other differently from that point onwards. And the game started changing. I was in a group which was taken over. It wasn't enjoyable. Left the trade behind.
Right.
And moved on. I've been doing different things. Team Langstein is a Le Mans 24-hour ticket agency and camping agency. Got involved with building this when I met Carl and Callum in Gibraltar several years ago, befriended them.
Is that how it came about?
Yeah. Callum moved to Reading and I even knew where'd you live? Oh, Reading, have you heard of it? Yes, because that's where I'm from. Became friends, popped in a lot. When the guys were moving office, did the first studio. And then when the guys were moving office, these two, and it was a big leap of faith for Carl, to be fair. It was like a big trust me bro thing. But my stepfather used to have a company building television scenery and exhibition stands, motor trade stuff.
Well, that came in handy at just the right time then.
I did a couple of summers when I was 14 and 15 and I never forgot.
Perfect.
So we threw ourselves in here and here we are.
So we've got both sides of the buy side and the sell side
the corporate.
The car market. So that's perfect. So the first question I wanted to go to is about the trends in the car market at the moment. So, I mean, I look at the car market, but I look at it in a completely different way because used cars are basically a forward indicator on where inflation is going. New car prices are basically a current indicator of where inflation is, and car insurance is a lagging indicator of where insurance is. But what is the actual trends in the car buying market at the moment? Because I hear that it's strong at the low end and dying on its arse at the upper end. Is that right?
I think I'm going to pass over to you for the upper end stuff.
Right.
Let me interject. Yes, it is a good indicator. And when you have a dealership in your town, you can start to predict what's happening in local events by how people are coming into your business or not. And people can often act en masse, and you can have a very quiet period and you just don't know why. And then things start to filter out and make sense. So you use car buying habits are a really good early indicator of what's going on in the economy.
Exactly, yes. And you tend to buy at the lower end, do you, Jeff? The cheaper cars?
Yeah, exactly.
So what's been happening to the prices there over the last year or so?
Well, you go slightly further than that and you look at what's happened with... You almost go back to sort of Corona and the supply issues in new cars, manufacturers struggling to get microchips, which led to delays in the supply of new cars, which led to the bolstering of prices in the second-hand car market, which meant that everything kind of solidified and prices started to climb. So what we're finding now is I used to be able to pick up cars for less than a grand with an MOT running and driving, the kind of base lowest entry-level cars that I used to buy are now much more expensive. So people are looking to second-hand cars more than they perhaps...
So like the £500 car has become a £2,000 car, something
like
that.
Yeah, the bangers are getting less affordable.
Right, okay.
Yes.
So what's the sort of minimum sensible price that you can spend on something that is actually worth having and isn't just going to be a complete nightmare?
Well, again, it's all relative and it depends how risk-averse you are, but there's this sort of... People get lost in this. If you're not going to go down the sort of new or nearly new route and the sort of least finance route, and let's say you have got a small pot of cash to play with, and generally for most people, it's somewhere between zero and about £10,000 on the lower end of the market.
Yeah.
You've got different levels of risk, because if you want to buy something older and you don't mind having something that's higher mileage, you've got less risk of something major going wrong. Whereas with something that's slightly more modern, things get more complicated. We've got things like diesel particulate filters and dual mass flywheel for the clutches and all this complex technology, which when it can go wrong, it can be very expensive. So if you don't mind buying something that's older, sometimes you can get a more reliable car because it's less complex. My experience over the last few years, or my whole life, to be completely honest, I don't think I've ever spent more than about £5,000 on a car. I've arrived today in a 2005 BMW X5 with 220,000 miles on the clock that I paid £1,000 for. Now, some people will tell you that a cheap BMW X5 four-wheel drive luxury SUV is a risk, but mine seems to be fantastic and I absolutely love it. Most of the cars I buy are high mileage. They all tend to be fairly cheap, but I can take the risk because I don't mind cars. If people don't want that level of risk, or if they don't want to, you know, use cash, if they want to finance, then that's where they're going to be walking into the kind of dealerships that Mark has got more experience with.
And I suppose if it goes completely wrong, oh no, I've lost £1,000 on a BMW and I'll get another one.
Absolutely. And then you do end up in this, there is a whole cult of Banganomics. And there's many people that contact me saying, Jeff, I've been watching your channel for ages. I've been wanting to get out of my lease car. I've been paying however much a month it is forever. And what I've done is I've gone and bought an old Volvo. And I get a lot of lovely emails from people saying, do you know what? I went and paid £2,000 for this old Volvo estate that I've picked up and I absolutely love it. And they're enjoying not having that monthly outlay. They might be enjoying getting their fingers dirty and, you know, getting in and doing some of the maintenance themselves. But there is a real community of people that just want to keep their old cars on the road and they want to do it fairly cheaply.
So let's say you are buying a used car. What are the key things that you want to think about in terms of evaluating it? And this can be in terms of either somebody buying it as an individual or a dealership buying a used car. What's the first things you look at to see if this is actually worth buying or not?
It depends on the scenario, really, I guess, because if it's a young mum with some children, then she's going to want safety and security and reliability. And really, she should be taking a car, potentially fairly new, under warranty, via a dealership, if funds permitting, obviously. She might want some security knowing where she stands. Some people like a fixed mortgage. Some people like a fixed car payments. They need to know where they stand. They can budget that way. Other people like to fly by the seat of their pants. I prefer to fly by the seat of my pants. But for some people who don't understand cars, don't understand the risks, they want more security, then that's when funding options and newer cars come into their own. And it can be done quite cheaply. You can lease a car for a couple of £100, probably a little bit more these days, but you can do it. I mean, I'm not talking anything glamorous at all, but you can have a car under warranty. You'll never own that car. You'll return it in 3 years and you start the process again. But a lot of people like that experience.
But then you don't have to worry about anything. I mean, you have to worry about the petrol.
Don't even have to worry about the car tax.
Oh, really? Okay.
In some leases, yeah. There's lots of different, there's leases, there's personal contract purchases, there's hire purchase, you can take a bank loan, you can put it on your mortgage, you can go, you know, there's so many different things you can do, some more advisable than others. But you can subscribe to a monthly payment with a lender, and yep. And it gives you some assuredness. And it depends where you are in your career, what you're doing. If you're working a day a week in the office, maybe, you know, you're home base, maybe you can take a chance on a £2,000 Volvo. I would. Great car. But I wouldn't take a chance on a £2,000 Vauxhall.
Right. Yes, okay. So, and what if you're going down the Bangonomics route? What is it that you're looking for? I mean, is it as simple as that? Oh, I just buy a Volvo or BMW and not a Vauxhall? Or
I think to some degree, with my experience of it, it's even simpler than that. I've always been a great risk taker, so I'm probably the worst person to ask advice for, because everyone is different. And I am more than happy to say I've bought hundreds of cars over the years, but because I've bought so many, the failure rate has been fairly low. So generally, when I'm buying a car, I go, do I want it? And that it really is as simple as that. But as Mark said, for many people, it's going to vary. And I am in a position now where people will say to me, right, this is what I need, or my car is broken. Or, you know, I had one this morning, right? Gentleman, friend of mine, he runs a Range Rover. His alternator's gone. He can't get it in the dealership to get it fixed. He can't really be bothered to get it fixed. The car is somewhere else. Can you help me find a car for a couple of grand that I can run around in because I can't be bothered to fix the Range Rover? That's a classic sort of inquiry that comes to me. Then it's a case of, what can we find for a couple of grand that's going to work for at least 6 months, that isn't going to break the bank on fuel economy, that isn't going to, you know, look totally wrong and out of place wherever he takes it, and is trying to find something that ticks all of those boxes.
Right, okay. That makes perfect sense. Okay, yeah. So that leads me on to asking then about, if you have bought hundreds of cars, personally, as you have, or you bought hundreds of cars through a dealership, what's the key thing that people need to know about negotiating?
That's a great question. I mean, as I say, I'm always at the lower end of the market, and for me, you're negotiating with a person as opposed to negotiating with a dealership or a chain or a franchise or whatever it might be. So it's always a different thing. And I've always followed the Richard Rawlings school of doing things from Gas Monkey, you know, a very famous TV show. And he would always say, turn up with cash in your pocket and try and pay as little as possible. But really, for me, and coming back to what you say about, you know, how do you buy a car? I have to go with my gut feeling. I have to read an advert and look at the photos and look at the, you know, if it's Facebook Marketplace, you can get a rough idea from the seller. And I can go with my gut and I can say, I think this is going to be a good car, because everything that I'm seeing, I'm getting the right kind of feel from it. And I've never yet bought a car that I got a good feeling from. It's turned out to be a pup.
But you're basing on 100 cars of experience.
Exactly.
A lot of people might have only ever owned one car.
Exactly.
Don't have an interest in cars. A car is a tool for majority of people. For some, it's an emotional purchase. Some a bit of both. But for many, it is a tool. And there are a lot of people who really just do not know what they're doing. And I would say to anybody, girls and guys, years ago when I was younger, people would, when you're bought your £500 banger, you'd also buy a Haynes manual and you'd flip through it and you'd have a go. You'd look and you'd try and understand. Internet was early days, so you didn't really have YouTube videos, how engines work, etc., etc.
But those days have gone, haven't they? Because I remember my first cars, I could buy a Haynes manual and I could amuse myself at the weekend by sort of taking it apart.
It's like having a toy when you're a kid. Yeah. Take
I always
a
had a few
apart.
Bits left over, which was fine, but it still drove fine. So I didn't worry
if
that
something
much.
Didn't work, you knew where the fuse board was, at least to take the fuse out.
But
avoid the problem.
I wouldn't even attempt that with my Beamer now.
To a certain extent, you can and you can't, but I bet your Beamer's automatic.
Yes.
Right. So if you're talking as more Bangonomics area, I would suggest to people the best car you can buy is the most, keep it basic, keep it simple, and that includes a manual.
Right.
Because when an automatic gearbox goes wrong, you're into a lot of money. when you have problems with the manual transmission, it's a clutch. It's a lot cheaper. And the best used car you can buy, I think, is one where you know where it's been and who's owned it before. Maybe an uncle, an aunt, a grandfather, someone who's had a car for 10 years. And they're the type of people, their house is immaculate. There's never any trash in their car. The lawn's cut. You know that car's looked after. And they don't want it anymore. And you say, well, I'll have it.
And what are the key things that that we should know about negotiating with dealers? When you try and take your car in to either sell or buy your used car from a dealer...
Don't walk in and say, I've got X to spend.
Right. That is always the first question they
there's
ask
so, But there's so... Why? Exactly. That's just... Yeah. But there's so many different facets to it. I said to you earlier off camera, no two used cars are the same. No two customers are the same.
Right.
And the dealer's job really is to sit down and talk to someone and find out what they want, what they like, what they want the vehicle for. Because the worst thing you can do is put the wrong person in the wrong car, or your customer in the wrong car, because they then resent it, they have problems, they might try and get out of it. And if the car's bought on finance and they try and return it, then you actually lose your finance commission. So there are, dealers get a bad rap along with estate agents, and dealers are much better than estate agents. Estate agents are around.
Right.
So that's a subject for another conversation. So the general rule is walk in, be honest, tell them what you want. Don't talk about money too much. Don't overcommit. But what do you want the vehicle for? Realistically, be honest.
Okay.
If you just want to look flash and pull girls, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
And they'll be honest, we've got nothing for you. Or we have, but it's far too, it's a lot of money. Are you sure this is what you want to do?
Right.
But again, you don't want someone who...
And once you've picked your car and...
This is the process. Yeah. Sometimes you get a family coming in, look, we've had a problem, I lost my job, I've got some bad credit score history, life's been a bit tough, but I need a car for work, can you help me? I'll take anything to a certain extent. Then they're not sort of throwing themselves on a sword, but look, I really need your help, can you get me in a car? And sometimes you'll see the guys who sell the cars in the finance. Not that finance is sold like it used to be, that's another subject, but they'll try really hard to help those people out because there's best honest position, and they'll find them a car. And again, they don't want it to go wrong, because they're buying it on finance and it gets cancelled in 3 months' time, they lose that commission.
And what if you've seen a car and you really like it because, I don't know, it's red or it looks fast or something like that, and you decide, I want that one and I want to get it as cheap as I can. How do you do that?
If you actually see, don't walk in and say, I want a red car. But I mean, if you actually say, right, I saw a car online.
But no, you've seen it. How do I get that one cheap?
Walk in, tell them what you want, how long you intend to own it, that type of miles you want to do. Obviously, then negotiate based on that. But are you bringing in a part exchange? What condition is that in? How many miles? What's the service history? Are the tyres bald or brand new?
Right.
There's a huge... whole plethora of other variables there, because that will then bring into your new vehicle purchase, whether it's new or used, about what they can offer you. Some dealers will, it's quite common, it's called an over allowance or an under allowance, they'll move the margin from one deal to another. So for example, you've got a £10,000 car, you want to buy a £20,000 car. You come in with what you think is a £10,000 car. Actually, it's £7,500. It's a bit nasty. So you come in and you want that £20,000 car and you want some discount and you're insisting your car's worth £10,000, and the dealer said, look, we just can't do it. We can't give any discount. Your car's not worth £10,000. It's actually worth £7,500. So what they might do is some adjustments. Maybe if they've got £3,000 margin in the newer vehicle, not that they'd really ever had that much, I'm just using as an example, they might take £2,500 from the new side and put it into the part exchange to support its value down. Because the last thing you want to buy is a £7,500 car for £10,000.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's so many variables. That's why salesmen will sit for several hours with someone looking at lots of options, going backwards and forwards.
But there is virtue in sheer obstinance that you can sometimes get a better deal.
They will get bored and wander off because someone else might come in and want it. So just be honest. This is not a battle. You know, you can make a good friend who will look after you. He needs to make some money. He's got to eat. She as well. The dealership lights need to stay on. Dealerships work on, you know, 2% margin net at the end. There's not a lot.
Right.
So it's very vulnerable business, and lots of dealers have gone, but, you know, closed. Franchises have generally, and I kind of saw it in the 90s, it changed with this EU block exemption, Mario Monti and everything. The perception really was then the franchise was more, the dealer groups became property agents, and the franchise was more the tenants. So right. it became a different kettle of fish, and it was just about
numbers. You're saying that the margins are too thin in dealerships to actually get much off the sticker price, is that right?
You can get this, it depends, but it depends what they pay for that car. Every used car is different. They might have had that car for 6 months and they're desperate to get rid of it. They will have a stocking policy. Good tip, if you go into the dealer and you've seen that's been in stock for 6 months, they will want to do a deal to get rid of it because it's taking up tarmac space, they're cleaning it every week, they've invested funds in financing it to sit on the forecourt, it's not going anywhere. They could have bought three other cars in that time and sold them three times over. They'll lose money on it to get rid of it.
So check Google Maps and zoom in and see if that car was there.
If you're monitoring your local marketplace, keep an eye on it, what's going on.
Okay.
If you're seeing the same car coming up and up and up, they'll do a deal. If it's just in, they'll have a queue of people.
I see, okay. And what about you, Jeff? Have you ever done a video on trying to get something ridiculously cheap or...?
Not really. I mean, you can, again, it depends how you want to buy, because we are talking about different sort of customers. Auctions are always fun. You could always try your luck at your local car auction and see.
Are they accessible to get into?
Some of them are trade only, but some of them are open to the public. But I mean, talk about gambling. That's the biggest gamble you could possibly take, isn't it? Turn up there on a Tuesday night with £500 cash and see what you drive away.
Do you get to have a look at them beforehand?
You can have a good look at them beforehand. Yeah, you can usually have a walk around. They often have a day where you can walk around.
To have all the cash on you for whatever you bid. But
well, you can pay on your card. But there's different ways of doing it. But as Mark said, every buyer is different, and for most people, actually, buying a car isn't just an adventure and that it's something that you do for fun, which is a lot of what my channel is about. But I've certainly had some interesting experiences with buying cars from auction. But it's certainly a much more serious picture when you start talking about much more expensive cars at dealerships. But yeah, I think go with your gut. But there are some basics that you need to check off when you are buying a car.
So do you have like a second channel, Jeff Sells Cars, or just is your entire street just you parked up and down?
It's a bit of an ongoing joke with my followers because I've moved house. I don't know how many times since I've started the channel, but I've never yet had any parking. So I do periodically have moments where I look outside and think, hang on a minute, I've got a few too many here, and I've got two on my drive, one at my mum's house, one at my mate's house, one at a garage, one on a road, one at a train station. Yeah. And they do sort of accumulate.
Right, there's a definite second channel potential there.
Yeah, I mean, wife would much prefer it if I started to sell more cars than I buy. Right. I think I own six or seven at the moment, and I don't really need any of them. But periodically, I do move the stock around.
Fair enough.
Sorry, just quickly going back to auctions.
Yes.
Dealers buy their cars from auctions.
They do?
Ah, okay.
Not exclusively. They will have deals with manufacturers to buy their demonstrator fleet back in. They might have deals with... rental companies or fleets where they've sold 1,000 cars into a fleet and they'll buy them back and bring them in. But they will go to, even new car dealers will go to auctions. They'll have corporate buyers who will sit in the corporate head office. If you're a dealer group of 10, they'll have a dedicated buyer who'll be touring around and bidding. So it's not a bad thing, but you must have a budget. Oh, we probably have a budget years ago of say £700 for every car bought in auction on average, called reconditioning, to recondition that car for sale for the front. I should imagine that's probably double now these days. So if you're buying a car from the auction, be prepared to spend a couple of £1,000 on it. But also if you go into the auction, know how cars work. Find YouTube. How does an engine work? What's that funny noise? All these kind of things will stop you making horrendous mistakes.
I think with auction cars as well, when buying from an auction, you'd like to think that the car has come from a big dealer group, and this car that you're looking at in the auction has been part exchanged by a little old lady and she's had it forever. And the dealer is part exchanging it because they have a policy where any car over 30,000 miles has to go to auction, and it's on 30,001 and it's the perfect car and you're picking it at auction for cheap. And it's not the fact that this car that's going to auction has been part exchanged with the dealer because it's had a problem that no one's been able to fix, and you're going to pick it up from the auction with some horrendous engine issue that isn't obvious, but you know, and that's the thing with an auction car. You're anywhere on that spectrum.
You could
get
a winner.
Best car in the world or the worst.
Sorry, so interrupt. Could get a winner. The stocking policy for dealers is incredibly strict. You're tying up cash, and that cash is money. You will be forced by your head office to liquidate your stock at auction if you are still sitting on it. So that's why they're desperate sometimes if they've still got it to sell a car, or they know it's going to auction because they'll even get less than they will get selling it through the showroom. So you can sometimes get lucky where a car has been sat on a forecourt. It was just the wrong car for that dealership and it's been bounced around a bit. Maybe it's not the most attractive colour or a bit higher mileage, or there's a stain on the seat and it's not particularly wonderful. But it's been prepped, it's ready to go, it's been fully serviced, might even have an MOT. It'll end up in the auctions because it's too old.
Is there virtue in going to a dealer's and just saying, look, which car do you desperately want to get rid of? And they might actually give you an honest answer.
I think you'd have to be lucky for them to be honest with you, I think.
Yeah, because they'll just sell you the one that makes the most money. Because at the end of the day, they've got to eat. We've all got to eat, make money and pay bills. And they need to maintain a margin. They're under, salesmen are under a lot of pressure. The dealer principals who are running the business are under a lot of pressure. And part of that will be, managing that stock as tight as possible. You might catch someone off guard and they'll tell you. They might tell you, and it's a little white lie. That's down to you to negotiate, to sort of use your skills.
Fair enough. What about financing these cars? What's the best way if you're not buying something for £500 and you need a bit of financing, what's that like at the moment?
Well, financing years ago used to be a wonderful experience because from the dealer's point of view, it gave you an opportunity to help your customer perhaps get in a car they couldn't afford, but also it was exploited by some who were a bit didn't have too many scruples, so they were making too much profit on the finance. What would happen generally in that situation is the finance companies would have a clawback against the dealer. So if someone was, I'm trying not to use too much industry terminology, but let's say someone was wedged into a car, and 3 months later they're like, oh my God, I'm paying £700 a month. This is crazy. I really shouldn't have done it. I don't want it. And they return the car, which they can do with their rights. There will be, or maybe they default on it. The lender will claw back the commission from the dealer. And dealers don't want that because they're 3 months down the line. They're struggling to hit the next quarter's target. And all of a sudden they've lost hundreds of pounds of finance commission. So they're even further behind. So, yes, there is unscrupulous positions of people taking advantage of customers who couldn't drive a calculator properly and work out monthly payments and what the overall cost was, even though it's on the document and the APR is printed very big. But a good business would manage it so that everyone made some money and people got the cars they wanted because they didn't want the poor customer scores. They didn't want the cars being returned. They didn't want the finance coming back.
Okay.
These days, and this is why I contacted you, I was deeply concerned because having left the industry for 20 years, gone off doing my own things, different businesses, I was looking at a vehicle. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, do you know, John might buy another car. And I looked at the finance in the dealer, 13%. Hang on a minute.
It does seem a bit high.
That is incredibly high. I looked at another one, 12. Looked at another one, 11. One was 14.
Well, especially since if you're a local authority, government agency or large multinational business, you can basically borrow for pretty much nothing. Maybe a quarter of a percent. So for to be paying 13%, that is...
I could buy the new car at 6.9% and a two-year-old or three-year-old used version at 13%, and their monthly payments are pretty much the same. So then, as a having run businesses and standing back at it, looking from a macro point of view, what's going on here? This is not good for the consumer. It's not good for the franchise. It's not good for anybody, really. And I was told by this contact that it's a new terminology called treating customers fairly, introduced by the FCA.
So am I to understand that your credit score no longer matters, you just get a blanket rate?
Yeah, to a degree. I'll get to that. So you were very much able to negotiate a deal for your vehicle and your finance based on how good or bad you were. And if you had lots of CCJs, you would pay more for your finance, and you might get rejected. Now, to a certain extent, that happens now, but through these FSAs treating customers fairly, they did a document. This is 2006, and the third from last word was what prompted me to contact you and say, Dan, have you seen this? Outcomes. We've heard outcomes. Quality of outcomes.
Not yes, I see.
2006. What was 2006? This was peak Blair.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You see where I'm coming from. So I asked you, do you know anything about it? You didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about it. So I looked into
it. Well, I have encountered the prelude to this, because this happened in the finance industry a few years before. So when I first started in wealth management...
What sort of time period is this?
Oh, this would have been early 2000s.
Yes.
So in the early 2000s, when I first started in finance, I started in wealth management. And when I very first started, we would speak to anyone. So a little old lady who had £500 a month to invest could ring up and we would give her, you know, a bit of advice. And then the FCA came along and said, oh, actually, no, what you need to do is you need to do a full assessment of their finances. You need to do this, you need to write them a letter, this whole bunch of stuff. And basically they made it so expensive that it was only worth giving advice to people who had portfolios of £100,000 plus. So basically what it did is, instead of little old ladies and whoever getting some advice, they now got nothing. So they just had to make their financial decisions based on adverts. So that was the prelude to this. And then
That's interesting you say that, then
spread out. Obviously, they got bored with doing it with just finance. They decided to start doing cars and everything else.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.